Welcome, everyone. Good morning. And Teruvan Sarnai. How are you all feeling today? Good? I know why. So we have a special guest of honor. So on your invitation, he who was known as Mr. Lasit, we killed him, and he has been reborn as a son of the Buddha. And you had made an invitation to him to visit all of you at Rajagiriya, because of course some of you were not able to make it on that day, which is quite understandable. And so he has come along here with me today by the name of Venerable Lokissara. Venerable Kirillavala Lokissara. That is his name now. So it is not just a new name, but a new game as well. This young man has now committed his life to the noble path. I want him to be an example to all of you, because you have now witnessed a transformation. With me, you didn't see me before this. With the other monks who've come here, you've not seen them before that. But now you have seen what the Dhamma does to people, and therefore what it can do for you. Absolutely not. The path of ordination is not cut out for everyone, that is understandable. But your attitude as a monk must precede your going forth as a monk. And if you have the right attitude, ladies and gentlemen, it matters not what you're clad in. It matters not where you are or who you are with. Because the Dhamma, once it's with you, it's with you. It is always the Dhamma that takes you to your refuge. No man, woman, or any other soul can save you. So before we continue with today's proceedings, the student has become the master. So why should I strain myself? When we have great students like this, I most respectfully invite the Venerable Lokissara Thera to precept the audience. So this is also going to be his very first precepting of an audience. Yeah, it's the first of many things today. And for the first time, he's also going to give you a short address in English, which is not his native tongue. He spoke to you at the monastery. That was his first Sinhala sermon. And today he's going to deliver his very first English Anusasana. Right, I know you want me to shut up now. Over to you, Venerable Sir.
Permission from the Noble Triple Gem to pay homage to the Lord Buddha. Please say Namaskara 3 times all together with me. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Namo tas bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhas. Good morning to you all. Hope you are doing very good. And as you can see, I have changed in last week. As many of you were there for me to wish me, to bless me for my ordination, for my new life. So thank you for that. Thank you for everyone for that. I can remember the very first day I came here and set all the cameras and wire cords and the screens, all those things. You helped me a lot to make that happen. So by doing that, I gained a lot of merits, and that merit itself helped me to get into this room. So you all helped me to get those merits. So you all can remember and rejoice in those merits also. So this is my very first English speak for the audience, and you witness that. So I have one final thing to say. This is Dhammapada Gatha, which helped me to change my life. It has very powerful meaning, very powerful meaning. And I'm not gonna explain that meaning. You can search it and find that very powerful meaning. Konuhaso kimanando nicham pacharite sati andhakarena onadda padipanna gavesata. And I wish you all the very best, and may you all attain supreme bliss of Nibbana in this life itself to end this journey of samsara. Theruvan sarana. Now I invite you, Venerable Bhatramulya Madhasana Nayak Thero, to continue this sermon. Theruvan sarana.
What is so unfold, ladies and gentlemen, was the finale of a story, a long story. Although for the Venerable Thero, this is only the beginning. It is said that one of the most difficult things to do in one's life is to come onto the Noble Path. To go forth and become a monk is one of the toughest challenges that one will ever face. You know, because this is the only path of no return, isn't it? Every other path winds itself back. It's like a game of snake and ladders. But this is the only path of no return. If you fulfill your monkhood properly and the tasks that lay ahead of you, if you fulfill your duties and responsibilities as a monk, if you fulfill exactly what you have ordained for, then monkhood is not something that you have to do again and again and again. But being a mother, we've done that so many countless times. Being a father, being a parent, we've done that so many countless times. Innumerable times, we've been everything else but the Venerable Sariputta Thera. He became a monk, and under noble association, under good guidance, as he had a great teacher to instruct him, to guide him and to advise him, that was the last thing he ever did. Where is the Venerable Sariputta Thera now? He is nowhere to be found. Because this is the one thing, if you do right, the only thing you will ever have to do. All other things are simply a means to another end. There is no other path, and this is not just because I'm a Buddhist, I say this. In every other faith, you will end up with God, perhaps. You will end up somewhere else. And then because people don't see what happens after that, they think that there is life eternal there. But Once you begin to understand the philosophy of the mind, once you begin to understand the philosophy of karma and vipaka, how what you give is what you get, and the cycle that all things are in, and how nothing is a fixed entity, then you begin to realize that there cannot be an eternal anything. Even the avidya is not eternal. There is a path out of that. That is the worst place one can ever find oneself in samsara. And the great heavens, that is also not eternal. The joy and the bliss that you will experience there will also come to an end. On plenty of occasions, the Buddha was seen wearing a smile on his face. And the Venerable Ananda, who was his chief disciple, fortunately for us, he was always stood behind him, like his shadow. And so he would question, "Venerable sir, why the smile beaming across your face? Ananda, do you see that buffalo over there, grazing on grass?" "Yes, sir, I do." "But what brings a smile to your face?" "Well, Ananda, that buffalo was once the Mahabrahma." And he thought he was the creator of the world. That's why they call him Pitamaha, the great father. And the Buddha says, "Ananda, if all beings were to see what I can see today, if all beings were to be able to witness the journey that all sentient beings take through in samsara, they would think this is a joke." Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to say, samsara is the biggest joke. And the laugh is on you. We are so incredibly fortunate, as I keep trying to remind you every single week, there is only one thing that is worth doing after all. All other things are simply means to an end. They just take you places, but they'll always turn themselves back round. You just go, keep going round a roundabout. That's all it is. The twists and turns that you take, none of them lead you to eternal bliss. Don't think of Nibbana as nothingness. Think of Nibbana as a state of mind where there is no suffering. Show me anyone who is free of suffering that is also a mother. Show me any father who considers himself a father who is free of suffering. A teacher, a doctor, an engineer, a musician, an artist, a lawyer, a politician, a king, a great emperor. Show me a god, a deity who's not a noble one, who's also free of suffering. I dare you. This is the only path that is worth taking, ultimately. So once you're exhausted, whenever that day might be, you come and let me know. When you're tired of doing all the things that you do in the name of happiness and it's just not working out for you, that day you come and let me know. So far, it seems you're still trying, aren't you? Well, I salute your vigor. I salute your courage. I salute your determination, because you have more determination than the Buddha. He gave up trying to do all these nonsensical things and trying to be happy 2,500 years ago. And you carry on. Well done. He should have been here to see you. You know I only speak with compassion to you. Because I want you to enjoy what Lokisarahamdra has been able to enjoy today. I want you to enjoy what Sudhasihandra is enjoying today. In the name of eternal bliss, do whatever it takes. Do the best you can. It speaks volumes that on a day like today, you have brought yourselves here. I salute that as well. It is quite honorable. These are the honorable things in life. These are the honorable deeds. Deeds that earn you honor in the Mahasangha, with the noble ones. These are the truly honorable things. Because these things lead you somewhere. You're striving to understand and comprehend the Buddha's teaching. Think about how you spent last New Year's Eve. Where were you? Don't tell anyone. What were you doing? Enjoying yourselves? Yes, I remember, if I go back a few years in my life, I also looked forward to New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, Vesak Eve. All of these were Eves, weren't they? We used to look forward to all that. It was a reason to celebrate, reason to indulge in sensuality, reason to enjoy the five senses. Because we thought, I thought, as you would have thought, that the next opportunity to enjoy the five senses would be the one that you've always been looking for, and that will fulfill you, that will make you content somehow. This is that carrot that is always held and hung in front of you. You can always smell it, but you can never taste it. You know what's behind the carrot. That's why they call it a donkey. Because it never realizes that this is only a carrot, and the carrot is always a step ahead of me. Always. Just think about it, ladies and gentlemen. You know, it is one thing to bring your hands together and rejoice, of course, in one of us who's gone forth and gone on to achieve something great in his life. But whenever you do that, I always ask you to think about yourselves. You know, it is fine to cheer on a runner as he approaches the finish line. It's fantastic. Cheer them on. Wave those flags. And give them water. Give them, refreshments. That's all good. But none of that helps you. Your cheers don't help you until you join the race. They don't give a trophy for the best cheerer, do they? There's a first prize, there's a second prize, there's a third prize. Have you ever heard of the prize they give to the best cheerer? No. So what, 31 sermons by today? Am I right? I wish to consider myself a good farmer. I'm looking to yield my crop. When can I harvest? Hello? When am I going to get my yield? When am I going to see you become a son and a daughter of the Buddha? When are you going to come and enjoy the bliss of Nibbana? Something so sacred, something so holy, something so perfect, something so blissful. The only place you can be, the only state of mind you can achieve, where there is no fear, where there is no grief, where there is no envy, where there is no lust, where you're not scared or afraid of anything. The only place you can be where in the name of death, at the sound of death, when death calls, you go, oh, why so late? I was expecting you sooner. This is the only place where you can claim that. Fearless in the face of death. Because you begin to comprehend that death is only a creation of the mind. See, then death can't fail you. Death can't scare you. Death can't worry you. But to this day you live your lives, you know, as you get into your car and drive back home, if someone pulls in front of you without warning, your heart skips a beat, doesn't it? And if your child is with you as well, it skips two beats. For every member of the family in the car, you know how much you suffer on their behalf? For every loss you weep, ladies and gentlemen, for every loss you grieve When are you going to put this misery behind you? I honor you. You're making your efforts, yes, I understand. But I will always keep encouraging you to do more. As our teachers always did with us. Even when I got 99 at my exam, my teacher said, where's the other one? I thought I'd pass with flying colors, but my teacher always pointed out, where's the one? That is what we need teachers for. It's one thing to appreciate and congratulate the good we've done, but the only way we keep moving forward is if we have teachers who will always show us our weaknesses, our faults, our shortcomings. Do you agree with me? Would you rather me get together with all of you and always congratulate you and tell you how good you are? Don't you know you're good? Do you need me to tell you how good you are? Aren't you a good person? Of course you are. You know how good you are. What you don't know sometimes is what the weaknesses are, where the faults are, where the flaws are. Because we so readily see the log in another person's eye, but not the speck in our eye. But 8 billion people, that's the world's population. People who are out there, they can see our faults. We need to make use of that. So every time I'm permitted to sit on this seat, I will always keep speaking to you and urging you, encouraging you to take the next step, whatever that next step might be for you. If you are someone who observes the five precepts but only adheres to one, I'll keep asking you to adhere to two from here on. If you are someone who adheres to all five precepts, I'll ask you, when are you going to adhere to the eight precepts? I'll keep asking you that. You give me alms, what are the reason? To please me? For me to think that you are my friend? What good is a friend who's not with you in times of your need? What good is a friend who doesn't watch out for you and remind you when you need to be at haste with some things, with the things that always skip your mind? Who else do you meet on a daily basis, on a weekly basis that reminds you, time is ticking, do something for yourselves? Here's what they'll tell you. Time is ticking. Where's my report? Time's ticking. Where's my money? You said you'd lend it back to me. You said you'd return it to me 2 weeks ago. Time's ticking. Where's the rent? That they'll ask you. Where's the loan installment? You were due on 2 weeks ago. Where is it? Time's ticking. Where's my birthday present? Your kids will come asking you. Where's the Valentine's card? Where's that necklace you promised me? Where's that trip to Paris that you promised me on our engagement night? That they'll keep asking you. People will try to get the best and the most that they can out of you. You can't blame them for that, because they don't know any other way. If people think that the only way to get happiness is to get it from the outside, then of course when you go and stand in front of them, they'll want nothing more from you than their happiness. You can't blame them for that, ladies and gentlemen. You of course are now beginning to understand that happiness does not come from the outside. You can't import happiness like you import a Maruti. You can't do that. It has to be home-brewed. It has to be homemade. Doesn't come from anywhere else. To find happiness, reach within your own heart. Seek the Dhamma. Comprehend the Dhamma. And happiness is yours. This is the only path to empowerment. It is, I tell you, it is. I don't want to see you begging for your happiness from every Tom, Dick and Harry. I don't want to see that. No human being deserves to do that. Because happiness is yours. It's yours. You don't need to go borrowing happiness from the bank manager. Why do that? Just think about it, the last time you had to go on your knees to the bank manager and said, "Please, I'll do anything you say. Any forms, just ask me where to sign and I'll sign. I don't even need to read the small print. If you'll take my wife at the end of the day, so be it. Please, can I have the money now?" You weren't really begging for a loan. You were begging for happiness. That's the problem I have. That's the bone that I have to pick with Mara. "Why have you fooled them?" I ask him every day. "Why do you trick them like this? Why these dirty tricks? Let people realize the truth and then let them choose for themselves. Isn't that fair game?" Every time you seek happiness from the outside, ladies and gentlemen, it is because you are delusional. Delusion creates illusions in your mind, and then you think more of what is out there. What is not out there, you create in your mind, and then you project it to the outside world. I will prove that to you today. That is why there's a screen behind me and one in front of me. I'll prove that to you today. Hopefully you will go home today realizing, having realized who you really are. As you look in front, as you look at the mirror, as you look at yourself in the mirror, hopefully tomorrow, as you celebrate New Year's dawn, you will start the new year off as a changed person. You heard the Dhammapada stanza that Lokasatera just recited to you. He couldn't have emphasized it enough. He said there's a very powerful meaning behind it. Oh yes, there's a very profound meaning behind it. Did you know that on the occasion that the Buddha recited that stanza, 500 people attained the state of Sotapanna? Tell me that's not profound then. 500 women for that matter. There were a bunch of men in the city of Savatthi many years ago. 500 of them. They had heard of Visakha, who was the chief benefactress of our Buddha Sasana. But they had heard of her generosity. They had heard about her kindness, her compassion and her virtues, because by that point she'd become a Sotapanna herself. And these men, they wanted to give their wives a gift. Now think about, you know, people say that those days people were so backward thinking. And we in this day and age are so forward thinking, right? That's what people say. Nowadays, what do you give your wife as for a gift? A trip to Hawaii, a necklace, a ring, a bunch of flowers, so on. These men, 2,500 years ago, prehistoric, eh? Those men, they wanted to give their wives a gift. You know what they did? Each of them, they spoke to their wives and they said, "Darlings, we love you from the bottom of our hearts. You spend day and night looking after us, looking after our families, slavering as women do, as the women used to do back then. We want to give you a gift. We want you to go and spend some time with the great Visakha. So let us look after all of your duties, all of your responsibilities, we'll take them over. Why don't you go and spend some time with the great Visakha? She lives close to the Jetavana monastery. You can go and spend time with her." So all 500 of them, they relieved their wives of the various duties, chores and responsibilities that they had and said, off you go. Because what they gifted them was noble association. Because they knew that Visakha had so much to teach. She was not just a mother to many children. Various accounts have various numbers as to how many children she mothered. But that's not the matter of it. But she was certainly a mother to many children. But above all, she was a what? She was a stream enterer. In other words, she'd entered the stream that would take one to Nibbana. That is what the men back then wanted to gift their wives. Touché, eh? Think about that. Gentlemen, do you deserve to be called gentlemen? If so, think twice about what you would gift your wife for her next birthday. We have almost 90 Anagarika Mahatmyas at the monastery, all practicing the Dhamma diligently. All have committed their lives to the noble path diligently. They observe the same precepts that the Samanera monks observe at the monastery. All 10 of them. All 10 precepts. They practice the path, they spend their time with the monks, taking instruction from them, guidance from them, teachings from them. They discuss the Dhamma every single day, just like we do. The way they spend their day is no different to how we monks spend our day. And even when it is not mandatory for them to do so, they observe the Vinaya that the Buddha laid down for the bhikkhunis. There are more precepts than for the bhikkhunis than there are for the monks. Would you believe it? They observe each and every one of them out of their own choice. We didn't enforce it on them. They wait to speak to you. So, gentlemen, give your wives, the wives that you love so much, the wives who've always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine, the wives who've been your guardian angels, the wives who've always been there, in the tough times, in the rough times, for you to shed a tear and a shoulder to cry on. Those wives who have always been there for you. Your strength, your pillar. Give them the gift of Dhamma. Give them noble association. Because there may be problems that they will struggle to share with a male, maybe even a monk. But that is why we have our Anagarika Mahatmyas who are an asset to the Buddha Sasana. You can freely speak with them and share with them whatever problems you have. Discuss with them things that you've never shared with anyone else. Perhaps your deepest, darkest secrets. Maybe there was once something so unfortunate that happened to you. Nobody knows about this. There have been times where young women have come forth and they've shared with the Anagarika Mahatmyas. We don't know the names, but they come and share with us the stories. Some women who've had to take an abortion, no one knows. But they've had to live scarred for the rest of their lives until they found noble association. Things that they could not share with the Swamin Mahanse, for obvious reasons. Because a mind is a mind is a mind, ladies and gentlemen. There are no male minds and female minds. A mind is a mind. You perceive that you are male, you perceive that you are female, but a mind is just a mind. So when a mind suffers from lust, when a mind suffers from desire, this is a disease and you need medicine. But as you'll understand, how can a lady go in front of a monk and explain to him, "Venerable sir, I have desire, I have lust, and these are the ways in which I suffer. Can I continue?" And the monk will have to tell you, "Madam, we'll have to stop there." I can't discuss the particulars of your situation. I can give you the Dhamma, but I can't go any further. But if it's an Anagarika Mahatmya, no problem. As I say, this is an asset to the Buddha's asana. I've not seen a similar program before, honestly. Because they're not just in the sasana. They're doing everything that Guru Hamdru advises them to do. They take instruction, the same sermons that the monks get, they get as well. So in every single way, they are followers and practitioners of the Buddha's teaching. The only difference is they are Anagarikas. Someone asked me the other day, why Swami Mahasaya, do you not ordain them? You know what the state is like, the situation is like in our own country. For Mehenin Mahanses. Because once you become a Mehenin Mahanse, you become affiliated to a certain institution. Personally, I've got nothing against that. But once that happens, there's a certain regime that you have to follow. Monks have a lot more freedom and liberties that Mehenin Mahanses don't enjoy in this country. I'm not speaking against that, by the way. That's just the way things are. And because we did consider this option, shall we give them the opportunity to go on to become Mehenin Mahanses? We explained the situation to them. They discussed among themselves and they came and said, no, Swami Mahasaya, we are fine just like this. Because now they have the freedom. They don't have to be affiliated to a certain institution, whatever that institution might be. Because we studied this thoroughly. Because we wanted to give women every opportunity to attain Nibbana. If going into robes makes it easier for them, of course we want that for all. Of course. Like I said, I don't see men and women. Do you think my teacher does? He taught me how not to. There are just chittas. So every opportunity a chitta can get to attain Nibbana, it must be given, shouldn't it? So man and woman, man or woman, makes no difference. Because a chitta is a chitta. But we went through the details of it. We went through it with a fine-tooth comb. And we realized that going down that path is only going to make the path more arduous for them, more difficult for them. And it's going to get them to have to align to a certain institution. And then once they're there, they have to do what is regimented for them there. From there on, they cannot be practicing the same Dhamma that we preach, we practice, and therefore they will have to find a different teacher. That's the way it is. You do understand we've not come into the sasana just to be ordained, right? If the sasana didn't offer us Nibbana, I wouldn't be here. I'm not a monk after all. I'm just a scientist in a robe. Someone on the quest for happiness. That's it. I'm only here because this path leads me there. If this path leads me to anything else, ladies and gentlemen, be that power, be that fame, be that glory, be that authority, be that a high political arena, be that a businessman, be that a kattariya. I'm not here for that. Because there are many other avenues that can lead me down those routes, down those avenues. I'm not here for anything other than Nibbana. So therefore, at our monastery, whether it's a man, a woman or a child that walks through our gates, it is Nibbana that we offer them and nothing else. Nothing more, nothing less. So this is why, having considered all of the options, having consulted all of our teachers and people who were in the know, I mean, to this day, when you go to Anuradhapura Polonnaru, don't you see Silmanian Mahanses? You know, with a bag full of whatever, you know, carrying around, walking down, up and down the streets. No refuge. What a pitiful state that is. I mean, we feel sorry for them. But you can't pick everyone up and get them into your car and drive them home, right? So therefore, what we wanted to do, we want to do it right. So to this day, they are practicing the path, the noble path, no less than any of our monks. They eat the same food. They meditate with us. Not in the same precinct, but of course, they do the same meditation, they take the same instruction. Each and every one of them has a teacher. And in addition to that, they provide the sasana service as much as they can. I think to this day, there are many scores of young women they have saved. From suicide. Oftentimes they go to rehabilitation centers, juvenile centers, where there are young girls, and after having spent half a day with Anagarika Mahatmyas, they come up to them and ask them, Mahatmya, do you mind if I call you mother? I've never had one in my life. And for the first time, I'm beginning to understand, I'm beginning to realize what a mother must be like. Of course, once you practice the Dhamma, it is not just because they are women. Not every woman is cut out to be a mother. Have you not seen that in your own lives? Not every woman you come across is cut out to be a mother. A mother is someone who should have compassion, boundless compassion, limitless compassion towards her children. Excuse me. But then these Anagarika Mahatmyas, they show compassion not to their own blood. It doesn't need to be. Because in this business, water is thicker than blood. The pure water of Dhamma is what unites us. So, gentlemen, once again, I invite you. Before you begin to even consider going into robes or becoming Anagarikas or whatever, I tell you, just go and talk to them. See what's going on with them. Have they gone cuckoo? All of them in their youth. Very successful people. Some of them doctors, engineers, scientists, teachers. You get the lot. Many of them citizens of other countries. They went looking for pastures greener on the other side of the fence. But then they realized happiness is not out there. It's not in Sydney. And it's not in London. It's not in Toronto. And it's not in Colombo either. Happiness is where you are. And you stop looking for happiness, that's where happiness is. So the whole process of practicing the Dhamma, ladies and gentlemen, is to empower you and to help you realize that happiness is yours and yours alone. It's with you right now. Do you know there's an arahant that lives inside of you right now? It's like the iron that has rust around it. That is what you are. It's the same thing. Like an iron that has rust around it, out of years of exposure to humidity. Now there's rust around the iron. All you got to do is scrub it off, scrape it off, and then you have the iron. In the same manner, there's an arahant inside each and every one of you. Your chitta begins with freedom. Your chitta begins with happiness. Your chitta begins with bliss. But it arises on a bed of ignorance. That's the problem. As it arises on a bed of ignorance, it is always defiled with ignorance. And therefore, the moment it's born, this nascent chitta, the moment it's born, it goes on a search for happiness. Because what is this ignorance? Happiness is out there. It's in the sights, it's in the sounds, it's in the smells, it's in the touch, it's in the thoughts, Therefore, go looking for it. This is ignorance. Forget a chitta. Is that not what you've been doing all this time? Because you are, after all, the product of your chitta, aren't you? The actions that you take, the thoughts that you have, the speech that you conduct, all of this is a representation of the chittas that work inside of you, is it not? So when you went to the cinema last time, what were you looking for? What were you looking for? One word? In one word? Yes, madam. Happiness. So inside, did you not seek happiness? When you put on your music as you go for a jog in the morning? Running, you seek exercise. Yes. Absolutely. You need that. There's no question about that. Even after you become an arahant, if you need some exercise, get some exercise. No problem with that. But the music in your ears, what are you looking for? That's happiness. You spoil every chitta because it is born on a bed of ignorance. Each chitta that has the opportunity, that has the potential to arise and pass away happy, content, blissful, is spoiled in the moment of birth. It's tainted at the moment of birth because it is born on a bed of ignorance. What we are trying to do, ladies and gentlemen, is to feed each of those chittas a bit of Dhamma, just a bit of Dhamma, so you can listen to it, bear it, and practice it. And so as each chitta bears a bit of Dhamma, what it does is, before it passes away, it cleanses the bed on which the next chitta arises. See, that is what your responsibility is. As parents do the best they can so that their children will have a better future. Yes? You save up so your children can have a better future. Better than whom? Better than you. That's what we do as parents. That's what you do as parents. In the same way, it is the chitta's responsibility to create a better future for the next chitta. That is how we do this. So chitta by chitta, we move closer to Nibbana. One chitta at a time. You need noble association so that every chitta that arises is given a fighting chance. Without the Dhamma, lost hope. No hope. That's what's going on. A bed of ignorance. Each chitta that arises. To be given a fighting chance, you need something to come from the outside. That something has to be the Buddha's teaching. It has to contain the essence of the Buddha's teaching. Anicca, Dukkha and Anatta. That is what we are striving for. That is what we are all trying to do. Share with you that Dhamma. It can come through your eyes, it can come through your ears. These are the only two channels through which one can be, let me create a new word to the dictionary, drushtified. Indoctrinated. These are the only two ways in which a doctrine can come to you. Through your eyes and through your ears. Aren't you? You still have good use of both these faculties, don't you? Well then let's wait until they stop working, shall we? You know my grandmother? I love her. She's almost 90 now. To this day I remember how she used to dote on me. The first grandson I was. She had 11 children. So again, I've lost count of how many grandchildren she had. But I was the first. She loved me like anything. She used to carry me, and whenever we used to visit her, She is to cook her best, her finest. So once I came across the Dhamma, I wanted to give her that. In just the same way I want to give you the Dhamma, I wanted to give her the Dhamma. So when I turned round and looked for her, I called out to her, Achyamma. She wouldn't answer. I said, Achyamma. She wouldn't answer. I asked my mother, why won't she answer? She can't hear you, Putta. It's too late for her now. So we tried hearing aids. Still doesn't work. Now what hope? So there came a point where all I could do for my Achyamma, who loved me, who doted on me, and who cared for me like her own child, the only thing I could do was to visit her so that she could give me some alms. I remember the day I sat down, held this vatapata and said, Buddhan Saranam Gacchami. Everyone else in the room was saying, Buddhan Saranam Gacchami, and she was quiet. I couldn't even precept her. Too late. She's missed the boat. Shall we wait until that day dawns for us as well? We don't realize the value of what we have, ladies and gentlemen, until... Yep. When do you begin to realize how precious a mother's love is? Once you do, sir. When do you realize how precious this faculty of hearing is? Once you lose it. So wait not for that day. Some of you are nearer that day than others. Aren't you? What are you now? 25? 35? 45? 55? 65? 75? 85? Last 5. I can't stop time for you. Like I said yesterday at the sermon we did at the monastery, time and tide wait for no man. Tide is always an opportunity. That is what they mean by that. This is the meaning behind that. Tide is an opportunity. If you are a good sailor, what do you wait for? Tide. You wait for the right tide. You wait for the tide to take you to sea. You set your mast. You set your sails. You get everything you need to go out sailing. And then you wait for the tide. But the tide doesn't wait for any man. If you are ready when it comes, you get to go. But if you don't catch the tide, here's the next thing that you're going to have to catch. Time. Time will tell you to regret. It will remind you to regret the tide that you didn't catch. That's what time will tell you. So you can say, oops. This is what time always teaches us, doesn't it? When you miss the boat, you go, alas, if only I was there three days ago. If only I was there 2 minutes ago, I wouldn't have missed him. One day you'll say the same about Swami Mahansa. If only we went last week to Rajagiriya, we wouldn't have missed him. One day you'll say that about Swami Mahansa as well. We all had the same to say about the Buddha. If only we were there, just 2,500 years ago, we wouldn't have missed him. But then, of course, there were those who saw him, who met him face to face. And then he asked the Buddha, oh, who are you? Are you a man? No. Are you a deva? No. Are you a Brahman? No. Who are you then? I'm the Buddha.
Okay.
See ya. And they walk past. And the Buddha continues. See, even coming across the Buddha is not sufficient if you don't have merits. This is what a noble friend always does. They create the environment so your merits can begin to draw. But what if you don't have the merits? Now, I know some of our monks. They're working their socks off to try and get some of their siblings to come into the sasana. Sometimes a younger brother comes and they want the sister to come and join the Anagarika program. Sometimes there are elder brothers who want the younger brothers to come and enjoy the bliss that they do. I mean, what else do you want for your family? Of course, the whole world is your family once you've really begun to understand the Dhamma. But there are those who, upon whom you can have a bigger influence, right? A stranger, you meet them on the road and say, why don't you come to the sasana? He asks you, who are you? Get lost. Get out of my face. But then you can speak to your brother, you can speak to your sister, you can speak to your cousin, you can speak to your nephew, as you have done and brought people along here. I know some of our monks who, they go to, no stone left unturned. They go every length. And then they come and tell me, Swami Nath, I keep trying that. I'm trying every trick in the book, but it's just not working. What is it I'm doing wrong, he asks. I said, Swami Nath, don't you worry. You're not doing anything wrong. You can dig the well, but if there are no rain clouds above you, there's not going to be any rain. You can dig a tank, but it's not going to fill with water if there are no rain clouds above your head. So you need to have the merits so that when you come across a noble associate, when you have the opportunity to come across someone who can give you noble association, those merits now begin to mature. They begin to reap rewards. They come to fruition. That's why, ladies and gentlemen, from the day I began to realize this, I have not given up any opportunity to earn merits. Even now that I have become a monk, I only do it more and more. I reminded you the power of merits the other day, and I keep coming back to that from time to time. It is the only universal currency. The reason you have money in the bank right now is because you have merits in your merit account. It is those merits that get converted to money. It is those merits that get converted to your parents, your friends. You have a comfortable mattress to sleep on tonight because of your merits. Once merits runs out, that's it. If you don't believe me, stop doing merits and see how long you can enjoy what you're doing. And let life teach you that lesson. For those who might not be prepared to learn it from a teacher, because there are two ways in which one can learn, right? You can either learn from someone else's mistake, or you can learn from your own mistakes. Those who make the mistakes on your behalf, they're who we call teachers. That's why the Buddha is a teacher to all. He made every mistake. He did it every single way. And then he realized, none of those ways work. And he said, Dve me bhikkhave anta na sevitabba. That extreme, this extreme, none of those extremes work because I've tried it all. There's only one way. Ekayanang ayam bhikkhave maggo sattanam visuddhiya. Chitta. That is what you are. The chitta. See, I'm trying to help you figure who you are, ladies and gentlemen, so you can, once you understand this, you've read the manual. Consider yourselves to be an equipment, an instrument. If you don't read the manual, you won't know how to use it properly. You don't have some kind of special entitlement towards yourselves. That is why you can't always make the choices that you want and it doesn't always come true. Half the time they don't. Your choices, you know, and your likes, your dislikes, your preferences, your wants, they don't always come true because You are not the product of your desires. You are the product of cause and effect. Just because you want something doesn't mean you're going to get it. Right? In fact, in life we don't get anything we want. You only get what you deserve. That's why someone comes and says, I'm always the victim of domestic abuse, Swami Nuhansa. Why don't you, can't you talk to my husband and tell him to stop it? I say, madam, you deserve it. Huh? Almost sounds like blasphemy. And then I said, oh, cool down, madam, cool down. Let me tell you what you need to do. Let the husband be. If he is someone who inflicts domestic abuse on his wife, he doesn't deserve to listen to the Dhamma. Don't even bring the bugger here. If one does not know how to treat his wife, if a man does not know how to treat his wife respectfully, gracefully, lovingly, graciously, how is the Dhamma going to do anything for him? Only good people can go on to become great people. But let me teach you. Have you ever hit him back when he tried to hit you? Sir, I can tell you with my hand on heart, I've never done that. Did you ever fight back? Did you ever retaliate by taking it out on his parents? Venerable sir, I swear to you, I've never done that. I've always taken the sharp end of the stick, but I've never retaliated. Ah, good lady, sit down. Let's have a chat. Because I see fertile ground. Like I said, I like to consider myself a good farmer. So before I sow my seeds, I do like to check whether the ground is fertile. Because to me, life is precious, ladies and gentlemen, time is precious. I don't want to sing if it falls on deaf ears. But if you are prepared to listen, if you are prepared to embrace it, I'll sing to you, to your heart's content. I'll sing to you every melody in the book. I'll sing to you to your heart's content until you say, tell me, enough, Swami Nansa, got it. Chitta. I keep diverting today for some reason. 10:30. Not yet. Chitta. Each of these chittas arises on a bed of ignorance. So a sight comes along. A sight comes along. What is a chitta's job when a sight comes along? Receive, register, recognize, respond, and perceive. Now, a sight comes along. This is what happens when you open your eyes. A sight comes along. Here's what you see. This is the rupa in front of your eyes. What do you see? What do you see? A person. That's the problem. You won't after today. This is just rupa. How about this? Wait. What's that now? It's just a what? Same person, reconfigured. If Frankenstein would have his way, he could do that. Just reconfigured. So if that was a person, this is also a person. This is the same stuff, but reconfigured. Agreed. We don't call this a person. We might call it a dismembered person. But this is what comes along. Right? on a chitta, it hits a chitta as a rupa on a bed of ignorance. Now let's see what happens. The chitta begins by registering this. But as it registers this, it does on a bed of ignorance, which tells the chitta, not necessarily tells the chitta, this chitta is born with this knowledge. Ignorance is after all a knowledge. Isn't ignorance a knowledge? It's just bad knowledge, that's all. It's like a virus on a computer. Is that not also software? The virus is also a bit of software code, but it's just bad code. That's it. Like a bug, it's just bad code. So in the same manner, this is also knowledge, but just bad knowledge. Why do you say it's bad knowledge? Because of what it does. That's why. Because of where it leads. That's why. Let's find out where it leads. So as this chitta arises with this object, it does not just perceive a rupa, ladies and gentlemen, although that is all that has come in. And you will, as I said, once you watch the video today, I hope the penny will drop for many of you. I really hope it will. It's done the trick for many people, and hopefully it will do for you as well. So this is just a rupa. This is just matter and a configuration of matter, nothing more than that. A particular configuration of matter. No harm in calling this a human body. The problem is, if you think that this is an entity, I looked at the definition of the word entity in the dictionary just to check whether I was using the right term. And it seems I'm right. It said something along the lines of a unit that is separate from everything else and has an identity. That's exactly what I'm trying to refer to. When you say sattva, to borrow the Sinhalese term, or a being, this sense of separation that you have is really a sense of entities. Because you believe, you feel, not believe, actually you perceive that when you see things through your eyes, including this sight that you've just seen, ladies and gentlemen, you believe, you perceive that this is a fixed entity and this is a human. It cannot be anything else. It has always been a human. It will always be a human. Even once it's dead, you will still say that's a dead human. Once it's turned into ashes, you will say these are the ashes of the humans. You can't stop it. See, once you exhume the body, ashes, right? Ashes of whom? The human. All of this is food that has been reconfigured. And I'll prove the point to you in just a moment. So once it's on a plate, do you call it human? Before you eat it, do you call it human? This is human. Once the body is exhumed, you have ash. Ashes. Whose ashes? Yes, the human's ashes. So you call them human ashes, right? Before the body comes into this shape, it is just rice on a plate. Now what do you call it? Why is that not human? Huh? Why is that not human? Then that should also be human. Shouldn't it? Okay, so that's rice. You might say, okay, I can get that. I get that. Okay, chicken then. What about chicken? Slice, please. Let's find out whether it is you who's insane or whether it's I who's insane. Because this house ain't big enough for the two of us. Right? We need to sort this out one way or the other. One of us is insane. Let's find out who it is. And why doesn't the one who is sane help the other? I really want to give this truth to you, ladies and gentlemen, because it is so empowering. Grief out the door. Sorrow out the door. Fear out the window. What more do you want? The very reason you go watching films, doing whatever, eating and stuffing yourself sometimes with things that are not healthy for you, and then you regret. The reason you smoke, if you do. The reason you drink, if you do. The reason you eat so much, even when it's not necessary for you. Why do you have kadachoru at home? What's that for? What's pickle for after all? Why the icing on the cake? Those treats that you give yourself, the fatty foods when you know it's not good for you, but you can't help yourself because you believe happiness comes in slices. You believe happiness comes in bottles. You believe happiness comes in boxes. And therefore you suffer. I don't want you to be in this form of slavery. This is slavery. Come out of it. Once you realize the truth, you will no longer be slaves. You got the slide deck? Can you see anything on screen? Not yet. You can. So I'm trying to help you find an answer to this question. There are these places called, correct me if I'm wrong, columbariums? You've heard of them? They have them in Singapore and a few other places I know. I think they're called columbariums, am I right? Where you can go and save your loved one's ashes. You can put them in like golden containers. I mean, they cost a fortune. Columbariums? Anyone remember the name? Right, if you remember it, you can tell me if I got the wrong name. So, someone? Madam? Vaults, yeah. They have vaults in there. The whole facility is called, I think, a columbarium or something. Excuse me. So what they do is, once the person's dead, they take the dead body for a massage. Don't laugh now. They actually give them a good massage, and then they wash the body in essential oils and fragrances, and they give the body a good premium treatment. Sometimes they were not given that even when they were alive. Oh, you should see the love, devotion and affection that children begin to have when the parents are dead. Wait and see when you're dead. Because that is an opportunity to show everyone else that you're a good child, isn't it? Because when your mother is poorly, no one wants to know about them. Your relations don't want to know about that. When she's ill, nobody wants to know. Because now she's just a burden. So therefore, sometimes even the other siblings, they won't need to know about it. You have to bear it and do it and stomach it and look after her. But once she's dead, that's an open invitation. Property, inheritance. So relations that you didn't even know existed, they start coming. Even the phoenix rises from the dead. They start coming looking for what they can get out of it. So then, to stop people from questioning and asking awkward questions, you have to show the rest of the world that you've been a good daughter, you've been a good son, so you have to look after your dead mother now. I'm being very sarcastic right now. Not at you. I never want any of you to be like this. I know you wouldn't ever. Even still, don't. Once she's dead, she's dead. Now it's just matter. That's just going to rot away into the soil. The chitta is no longer there. This is just the rice that was eaten. This was just the food that is just recomposed. That's all it is. We talked about composition last week, remember? How the hydrogens and the oxygens went into making water, and the same elements could go and make other things. This is the same concept I'm going to get across to you now. So these are the ashes that you get from the exhumed body, which they then go and put in a vault, and then they pay a monthly price for that. So people do this stuff. Because they feel that this is still my mother. People feel that. This is still my mother in a vault. Well, what about the food that gets served onto her plate? before she eats it, is that not your mother then? Because that is just about to become her. This is what was her. If what was her is still her, then what's about to become her is what? Should also be her, right? So next time you go, dasamase ure katva, posesi uddi karanam, right? Before you worship your mother, maybe worship a plate of rice before you offer it to your mother, because that's just going to become your mother in a moment. Right. Let's get it up. So what do you see on screen? Just give me the answer that comes to you naturally. What do you see on screen? A chicken. Right. So this is in every single way, this is a chicken, right? You've never seen a better chicken than that. This is the best chicken that you can find. This is all chicken. All of it, 100% of it is chicken. Next slide, please. What's that? A dead chicken. So if this is a dead chicken, what do you think is going to come next? Let's find out. It's a defeathered chicken. Yeah? But it's still well and truly chicken. So we started with a live chicken. Then we had a dead chicken. Then we have now a defeathered chicken. What do you expect to see next? Huh? This is how it comes from the supermarket, right? Yeah, and you pretend that there were no previous stages. This is how God gave it to man. We conveniently choose to ignore the more dreadful parts of it, yeah? Okay, so I actually left out some of the other, there are some, a few more stages. So that dead chicken was a cartoon image. I did that deliberately, because I don't know how you might react. There might be squeamish ones among you in the audience. Next. Now what do we have? A cut chicken. It's still what though? Chicken. Appetizing? Not so much yet. Next please. Now what do we have? A de-skinned chicken. But it's still what? Chicken. If you've cooked chicken, then these are the natural stages that take you from the live chicken, which hopefully you will never get to see, and then the dead chicken that also you don't get to see, but you get the chicken that comes in the supermarket packed. You open the packing, and these are the stages that you process your chicken until hopefully gets the next stage. What do you have? The what? The seasoned chicken. Still what? Chicken. I keep asking you this question because at some point, I wait for that point where you're going to say, no, that's not chicken, Swaminathan. Let's see when that's going to happen for you. Because right now you're saying this is full chicken, 100% chicken. No less, no more, this is all chicken. So I'm waiting to hear from you when you begin to feel that this is no longer chicken. And then I'm going to ask you this question. So if you're now no longer feeling that this is chicken, was it not just a feeling that you had? So let's wait until we get there. Next one, please. Now what do we have? Cooked chicken. Now we have cooked chicken. Next, please. What does it remind you of? Tonight, huh? So we went from a live chicken to dead chicken to cut chicken to skinned chicken to seasoned chicken to cooked chicken to ready to eat chicken. Yes? What is it though? Still? Alright, video please. Right, now what are we doing? Eating what? Chicken. Right, so chicken was served on a plate. We used our cutlery to cut it up into pieces. And it's in the mouth. So you can imagine yourself doing this. You do it every day. We do it for a living, don't we? So now we've chewed the chicken. And it's come into a ball. of food, and now it's going down the esophagus. Most of this stuff you're all very familiar with. We've all learned it for science and health studies and so on. Yeah. So then you have the peristaltic movements that push the bowl of food down your food pipe into the stomach. Right, now what do you think is going to happen in the stomach? What's in the stomach first of all? What's now in the stomach? Chicken. Because this is the chicken that you just ate. Yeah? So now the chicken is in the stomach. Right, what do you see starting to happen in the stomach? We call that process digestion. So you have the gastric juices, you have the digestive juices, and it's showing you the mucous membrane which protects the acid in the stomach from digesting the wall of the stomach. And here, although you can't hear the audio, what it is that's hydrochloric acid, one of the digestive juices, and it's working on the bacteria. All the while it's digesting. So this is the chicken, and now the digestive juices are doing what to the chicken? Well, it's digesting it, isn't it? Essentially, it's breaking it down into smaller and smaller and smaller, what pieces? Chicken pieces. Right, hold on for a second. Just pause. Right. Now, as you watch this, ladies and gentlemen, try to bear in mind the idea that I'm trying to get across to you right now. I've been talking to you, trying to explain to you that there are no fixed entities in this world. That these things that we perceive as entities, right? Look at your arm or your hand for a second, either your left or right, whichever one you most like. Right? Now when you look at your hand, okay, you can look at me now. When you look at your hand, you feel that this is your hand, don't you? In fact, you feel that this is a human hand. It's not only a human hand, not just a human hand, it is my hand. It's my hand. It's either a male hand or a female hand. It's a child's hand. It's an adult's hand. All of these things you perceive. Do you for a moment, when you look at your hand and its construct, even consider that this is the food that you put in through your mouths, only reconfigured? In fact, when you look at yourself, you can't help yourself from thinking that this is, all of this is actually you. That's why when someone holds your hand, you go, why are you holding my hand? Take your hand away. Or, when you want to express affection, what do? You hold someone's hand, don't you? When you want to express affection, you hold someone's hand. What are you actually holding? What are you actually holding? What did you just put through your mouths? What did this person just eat? Chicken. And then what is happening to this chicken? It is being digested. In a moment you will see how it's going to be absorbed, ingested, and then you will see in a moment how it's going to become you. So let's leave that question towards the end of this talk. When you reach out to someone and hold their hand to show affection, I will ask you the question, what are you actually holding? Tell me that it is someone's hand, if you can, at the end of this video. Let's continue. So now you have the digestion going on. At every moment in this process, what's happening is there are physical and chemical processes that are breaking down the food that was put in through your mouths. That's why we call it the digestive system. Essentially, what the digestive system does is it breaks down the things that you put in through your mouths so that what can happen? So that what can happen? Why do we break it down? This is just a summary of what you just saw a moment ago. Why do we break things down? So that they can be rearranged. That's why. That's all, by the way. We digest food so that they can be broken down and rearranged. Now, as you watch, listen to my words, as you watch what's on screen, I want you to begin to understand. Well, I want you to begin to contemplate. So, who am I then? What is this body? Is it not just the food that was put down through my mouth, into my mouth, that is rearranged? So then where's the chicken? Where's me? But you can't help yourself when you look at yourself in the mirror. You think that you're actually looking at you. You feel that you are an entity. You never think that you are a chicken. Do you? No. You never feel that you are what you eat. You don't look at the mirror and think this is a carrot reconfigured. You don't think that this is a beetroot reconfigured or a brinjal reconfigured or an okra reconfigured. You never feel that way. You actually feel and believe wholeheartedly that you are looking at yourself. The very reason why you hold someone's hand. Now honestly, think to yourself, where do thoughts of lust and desire come from? At the same time, I ask you the question, how about feelings of disgust? Something you're not going to see in today's video, but I'll still leave the question with you so you can start thinking about this. At the end of the digestion process, what happens? If this is the mouth through which you put your food, this goes down into the sac that you call the stomach, and then what happens? Feces. Usually when you look at feces, how do you feel? Repulsive? Disgusted? Let's be honest. Yeah. You feel yucky? You don't want to touch it? You don't want to know what it looks like, because in so much so that once you do your job, your business, you shut the toilet, the lid, and you flush it even without looking at it. Sometimes it is so disgusting. Now I want to ask you the question, ladies and gentlemen, where does repulsion come from? Why do you feel thoughts of disgust? Did you know that that is actually one form of aversion? And then you come and say, Swami Nansa, I just have a bit of lust, but I don't have any aversion, no dvesha. But when you look at your own feces, in fact, it is even wrong to say that it is your own feces. Is it? Does your feces belong to you? What a wonderful talk to be having on the 31st day. Hopefully I'm not spoiling it for you when you'll be having your chicken tonight. No, but honestly, think about it, ladies and gentlemen. When you don't understand what's going on here, when you don't understand the process that's going here, you begin to have thoughts of desire and aversion. There is no room for desire and aversion for the wise mind. For the mind that sees with insight. There is no room for aversion and desire. Because all there are is matter taking various manifestations. What we refer to as manifestations is just matter and energy taking various forms. That's it. That's it. Now, answer this question for me before we continue. You're eating chicken. So this is the chicken you're eating. Let's say 70% of this you can digest and your body can ingest it. What can you say about the other 30? What's going to happen to the other 30? 70% of this you can digest. Right? As with any food that we eat, there will be certain parts that you cannot digest. And what does your body do? It ejects it. And that, as we know, you know, through as fecal matter. Yeah? When you look at feces, you feel disgusted. But don't you realize that it's actually 30% of what you put into your mouth? Where did that 30% come from? The very things that you put into your mouth, and when you put it into your mouth, you felt delectable. You thought it was delicious, mouth watering. But do you look at feces and never feel mouth watering? No. See? Something's wrong up here. So which is wrong? To look at feces and feel disgusted, or to look at a plate of food and for your mouth to start salivating? Which one's wrong and which one's right? They are both wrong. One's desire, the other's aversion. Both based in delusion. Moha is the root of raga and dvesha. Now don't you see, I'm giving you the medicine to free yourself from raga, dvesha and moha. Raga kyo nibbanam, dvesha kyo nibbanam, moha kyo nibbanam. When the Buddha was asked, "Venerable sir, what is nibbana? How do we know when someone preaches to us that it is nibbana that they speak? Because once you are gone, venerable sir, when you are not going to be here, who do we go and consult? Who do we go and ask? If the Dhamma that we are listening to is the true Dhamma?" And the Buddha says, as you listen to the teaching, if the fire of desire, the fire of aversion and the fire of delusion begin to exterminate, begin to extinguish in your minds, let it be known that this is a teaching that was once given by the Supremely Enlightened One. If as you listen to these words, ladies and gentlemen, you realize that the disgust that you had towards feces and the desire that you had towards a plate full of food are both beginning to extinguish, not just one. It's no good just one. That is why we never do meditation programs at the monastery where we ask you to think of your hair as disgusting, or your eyes as disgusting, your skin as disgusting, and there's pus and blood in your body. It's oozing and it's disgusting, because disgust is a manifestation, is a form of aversion. It is only the other side of the coin. That is desire. They are both equal vices. The only virtue is to realize that there are no entities in this world. All there are simply manifestations of matter and energy that have come together in this very moment. We call that the Pachupanna moment. What the causes are that are available in this moment, they manifest as an effect. It's just an effect. It's not an entity. It's an effect. That's why it is aptly named the principle of cause and effect. These are effects. That's all it is. Let's continue our journey. Right, now there's a narration that goes on with the video, but as we don't have the luxury of that, you'll have to listen to my voice. Let's carry on. Proteins. Now chicken is mostly proteins, as you understand. If you've done science, biology for O-levels and certainly for A-levels, you will have covered much of this, in fact more than this even. So this is not meant to be a science lesson, by the way. Okay? So please don't think that Swami Nwanza came to the Rajgiri today and he gave us a science lecture. This is not intended to be that. This is intended to be imparting knowledge so you can comprehend the truth, with the ultimate goal of you realizing that there are no entities in this world. All there are is matter and energy coming together, taking a particular manifestation. That's it. Are you all game for that? This is not meant to be a biology lesson. Okay? Although we are discussing biology, it is not the be-all and end-all of it. Right. Now, what you see on screen is a protein chain. In fact, the meat that you've just consumed in the body, as you saw the digestive juices, they went and started attacking it, basically attacking, by which I mean breaking them down into long protein chains. Therefore, they have to be broken down further. And there are enzymes that do this stuff. Very familiar stuff. We are all very familiar with all this. There are enzymes that do this stuff. Please carry on. So we need to break down this protein chains into smaller molecules that we call amino acids. Now, as you can see on screen, these are some examples of the proteins that you eat. So, you see an egg, you see beans, you see chicken out there, where in fact, all they are just collections, bodies. We've talked about this term before, a body of water, remember? These are just bodies. Also, the Buddha's term for this is kaya. This is just a kaya. A kaya is a body. A body is a collection of stuff, whatever that stuff might be. This is just a collection of amino acids bound together by peptide bonds. Don't you get too concerned or worried about the names. They're just amino acids held together through bonds. And what do enzymes do? Enzymes themselves are proteins. This is the funny part. Hold on a second. You know what you can do? You can take an egg, split it in half. Half of that egg can be converted to enzymes, which can then be used to digest the other half of the egg. How funny is that? So then, is it an egg? Or is it merely a combination of amino acids in a certain configuration? That's all it is. Otherwise, how can you use the egg to digest the egg itself? You'll see in just a moment how these proteins, how these amino acids go into making all of the things that you are made of. At which point I will come back to the original question, who are you? Or in fact, what are these bodies that you consider human bodies? How human are you, really? What is your claim to humanness? Let's find out. So, carry on. Now the amino acids are working their way through these long protein chains, and they are broken down into these amino acids, and these amino acids go into making all of these things in your bodies. So what they're trying to say is, once you eat an egg, as you do, they start to digest in your digestive system. So the mouth is where everything begins, with mixing with the saliva and so on. Pepsin is the protein that digests protein chains into amino acids by breaking the peptide bonds. So as you can see, those are those peptide bonds. That's the enzyme pepsin. And where it gets its name is because they digest peptide bonds. Polypeptides are just long chains of amino acids together. And so basically that's how digestion happens within the stomach. Right, we can stop that video there, and can we shift to the other one, please? Okay, now hold on. Now, once again, I ask you the question, what is the purpose of digestion? You have to keep that in mind as you listen to this. What is the purpose of digestion? Yeah, absolutely. Breaking things down so that the body has a chance to recombine them in a way that is useful to sustain human life. In fact, if you were fed an egg and it could not be digested, you would just be all an egg. See, think about all the things you've eaten. Have you ever eaten human flesh? No, but aren't you all human? Have you ever eaten hair? No, but don't you have hair? Have you ever eaten skin? No, but don't you have skin? Have you ever drunk blood? No, but don't you have blood? Have you ever eaten bones? No, but don't you have bones? Where do all these things come from? The very things that you put into your mouths are merely configurations of elements. That's it. What digestion does is it breaks it down so that is so important. The purpose is so important, so that they can be reconfigured to other manifestations, and that is what goes into making you all. Now, here's what happens at the DNA level. What you're looking at is a cell, which is what most of us are made of, or most of all of us are made of. In these cells, you have what you call the nucleus. Right, let's zoom in, please. Now, I'm going through this detailed explanation because there may be some among you who have not done science A-levels and maybe done other subjects like commerce or art and so on. So therefore, some of these concepts might be foreign, right? So that is why I'm explaining it to you step by step. Now, hold on a second, please. Here's what you have. Here's where you have the chromosomes. This is your DNA, wound up in a spherical shape. You get half of this from your mother and the other half from your father. This is basically the code that determines what you look like. This is why you resemble your parents in the way you look. So if you're fair, for instance, someone in your family would probably be fair. If you've got auburn hair, someone in your family probably has that. If you have green eyes, blue eyes, then someone in your family, a close relation, will probably have that. And if that is a dominant trait, then it'll always surface. See, don't. I have my biology teachers to thank me. Not to thank me, sorry. I have my biology teachers to thank because it is thanks to them I learned all of these things at biology, for biology at A-levels. So now I'm able to make use of that information, that knowledge, to help people achieve something much greater than becoming a biologist, than going on to become a doctor. My biology teacher who taught me at school wanted me to become a doctor. That's why she taught me biology. I am one. Just not in the way she envisaged. Today I'm able to make use of everything that she has taught me. This is why at the end of a sermon, when we transfer merits, we also transfer these merits to our teachers. If had it not been for her who taught me biology at school, I would not probably have used this example to you because I wouldn't be able to make head or tail of it. But thanks to them, I'm now able to bring these examples to you so that you can better understand who you are on your path to Nibbana. Right, so half from your mother, half from your father. Let's see what happens next. This is the helix. As you can see, that's your DNA. So you got that from your parents. Now these are the DNA strands, ladies and gentlemen, which encompasses the code that determines why you look the way you look. So what if you are twins? You have the same DNA because you both got that from the same parents. Right? Right. Now what happens is, hold on a second please. These DNA strands, they are wound together in a helix, and you can't think of it this way. Say you missed a lesson at school and you want to copy the note from your friend, you don't go to your friend and tear the page off and take it with you, do you? If you missed a note, what do? You borrow the book, you copy it from their book, so now you have an additional copy of what they have. The same thing happens here. Because it is no good to use the original DNA to construct new proteins, because what would happen then? If you keep tearing the pages out of your friend's book, what happens then? Before long, they've got no notebook. So for the purpose that reproduction, as it's happening here, for the purpose that a cell can keep on reproducing, make several copies of itself, time and time and time again, you can't take the original copy. You have to take a copy of the original copy. And that's exactly what's going on here right now. So the helix is unwound. There are proteins that enable that. And then there are these things called free bases. Let's not get too worried about what they are. Basically, they're just elements that are floating in the plasma, or rather in the nucleus, and they are, what they're doing are they're actively making a copy of your DNA so that that note can then be used for further processing. Are you all with me so far? Now, this might be new to you if you've not done this for biology, but I'm trying to simplify it as much as I possibly can. So far, we've got the DNA, a copy of it is being made. Let's see for what purpose. Let's carry on. So you can see the line in the middle, in the dark blue. This is the copy of the DNA that is being formed right now. And there you go. That is also called the messenger, because it now has the message that is originally in the DNA. I loved learning this stuff because I was fascinated by how the human body works. But the problem was, all the while I thought there was a human body to study. Today I realize how wrong I was. Right, here what you see, ladies and gentlemen, is the RNA or the messenger leaving the nucleus. One moment, please. And then, this message that has now been copied from the original DNA becomes the base. It becomes the foundation to do something very special. Here's the penny drop moment. You have this thing called a ribosome, which is also a protein. It binds to the messenger, and now what it starts to do is read the code. Where does this code come from? Your DNA. Where did that come from? Your parents. Right? So every cell in your body has to be coded. It has to have a code that determines something. What is that something? You will see in just a flash of a moment. Carry on, please. Look at what the ribosome does now. So that, you see that long chain? That's the message. Now pause for a second. What do you see there? The amino acid. Where did that come from? Where did that amino acid come from? The chicken. So I ask you the question, is that still chicken? Is that still chicken? Now you say, no, it's just an amino acid. So at what point is amino acid chicken then? Now let's see what's going to happen to these amino acids. So those amino acids which were produced as a product of your digestion are now brought together one at a time so that they can go back to forming what? Proteins. As you can see, you saw earlier that a protein chain was nothing more than amino acids held together through peptide bonds, right? Right, hold on a second now. What you just witnessed, ladies and gentlemen, was the same amino acid molecules. The same amino acid molecules, but now rearranged. And what determined the arrangement? What determined the arrangement? The DNA. That is why a chicken will always lay an egg. But you eating that egg, you don't become a chicken. All you do is you have a digestive system that breaks down whatever you shove in through your mouth. Breaks it down as much as it possibly can. It keeps on breaking it down to the fundamental elements that can then be recombined to form the proteins that is you. Right, please play. As you can see just now, that's a protein, which is what you ate just a little while ago. That's the end of it, I think. Now, at what point did the chicken stop being chicken? When it was a live chicken, you said it was a chicken. When it was a dead chicken, you said it was a chicken. When we de-skinned the poor thing, you said it was a chicken. Then when we marinated it or seasoned it, you said it was chicken. Then when we cut it up and cooked it, you said it was chicken. When you when you put it into your mouth and you started chewing on it, you still said it was chicken. In fact, once it's in your mouth, if you were to vomit it out, what might you say? Oh, what a waste. All that chicken. You'll still call it chicken. See, even once it's in your mouth, in your stomach, you'll still call it chicken. I'm asking you this question, folks. When do you stop calling it chicken then? When it's down to what level? Amino acids? So those amino acids, are they the chicken's amino acids then? These ashes, whose ashes are they? The dead man's ashes, right? So the amino acids, whose amino acids are they? The chicken's amino acids. Right, so when the amino acids were recombined to form proteins, such as keratin that's on your head, such as collagen that goes into making your muscles, whose hair is that that's on your head then? Still the chicken's? So at what point do you start to become human? At what point does the food stop being chicken? Then I have to ask you this question. What is chicken? What is human? What's beef? What's lamb? What's pork? So now come asking me, Swami Mahansa, as a good Buddhist, should I become a vegetarian? You no longer have a basis to ask me that question. What is meat after all? Just matter taking a certain configuration. That's it. This is why in Buddhist teaching, you will not find anywhere where the Buddha says you must not eat meat. But this is what the Buddha will say. You must not kill. So if you ask me, well, if you don't kill, how do you get the meat? I answered that question a few sermons ago. Our ancestors never killed, but they still got their meat. Because they were hunter-gatherers. They gathered the hunted. They didn't hunt. They gathered the hunted. The tide would wash fish onto the shore. And then when it was low tide, the fish would not be back in the sea. So leave it a while and the fish are going to be dead. You never killed the fish. So the gatherers would go and they would collect the dead fish. Now you have the protein that you need. Actually, you don't need any proteins. You just need the amino acids so that in your bodies, in your nuclei, they can be reconfigured to form the structures that we refer to as human. So if I can feed you amino acids, will you come asking me for chicken? So when you on your way home today, I'm going to give you all a kilo of amino acids. Will you promise me that you're not going to go to the shop and buy chicken? Excuse me. No. You can't promise me that. Because in your mind, you still perceive chicken. Chicken is chicken. Nothing beats chicken. Because you can't see that as just amino acids, just the elements. Because if that is chicken, ladies and gentlemen, you are also chickens. Because it's the same stuff, just rearranged. That's all. Now then tell me, if you have ever experienced lustful thoughts towards another human being, be that a man towards a woman towards a man towards another man, a woman towards another woman, whatever. If you ever experience lustful thoughts, must you not have those lustful thoughts also towards a chicken? Is it not the same stuff just rearranged? Huh? Speak up now, or forever hold your peace. See, now you have no grounds to hold an argument with me, because I have just revealed to you the truth. Once the truth has been revealed, it can no longer be hidden. If you really grasp what I have just shared with you, ladies and gentlemen, if you have really comprehended it, there's no going back. You will never look at a woman the same way again. You will never look at a man the same way again. God bless our marriage life.
I can hear the audience. If you love your wife, free her from suffering. That is true love. Because for as long as she considers that you are an entity and you are her man, when something she doesn't like happens to you, she suffers. How many tears has she shed on your behalf? How many times has she cried on your behalf? Because she thinks of you as an entity? Because to you, you are her husband. She fails to see you as merely a manifestation of matter and energy. Therefore, she perceives you as an entity. Therefore, when something happens, when the configuration changes, that's all that happens. When you chew food, what happens? Configuration changes. When you digest, configuration changes. That's all that's happening. So when your arm falls off, ladies and gentlemen, what happens? Configuration changes. That's it. Someone throws acid at your face. What happens? Configuration changes. That's it. Yes, it hurts. That's not what I'm talking about. It hurts you maybe say for 1 week, but for the rest of your life, how does it hurt you when you look at yourself in the mirror? How does that hurt you? For 10 long years, for 10, 20 long years, for the rest of your life, it still hurts you. How so? Because you don't perceive that all this is just matter reconfigured. You compare it with a face, a lovely face, a human face that you have in your mind, that you have held and clung onto. This is called upadana. Upadana paccaya bhava, bhava paccaya jati, jati paccaya jara marana shoka parideva dukkha domanasa eva eva meya tassa kevalasa dukkha khandasa samudayo hoti. Prove the Buddha wrong and I will disrobe today and come home with you to celebrate New Year's Eve. Prove any of these words wrong, I dare you. Just one, if you can. As I said, either you are insane or I'm insane. We can't both be right. Embrace the truth. Gentlemen, give your beloved ones the gift of Dhamma and give yourselves the gift of Dhamma. I'm certain the last 6 months, the last however many months we've done these sermons for, must have had a profound impact on you, and this is why you've kept coming. Even on New Year's Eve, you're here. That says something. I'm glad that you've given me the opportunity, given all of us, the Mahasangha, our Anagarikas, all of us, an opportunity to shape your lives for the better, to make changes, however subtle it might be, one chitta at a time. There might have been days where you came here with a headache, but you came here nonetheless. There might have been days where you were worried, you had fears, you had concerns. Maybe the children were home alone. Maybe you had an appointment that you had to keep to. Maybe you had to rearrange an appointment. Maybe there was lost business, lost profiteering opportunities because you had to bring yourselves here. All of that you did for yourselves. I'm glad for having had the opportunity to make even a small change in your lives. Because this is the service that I'm here to render. Every day I worship the Buddha and he tells me silently, but it resonates in my heart and mind. I have given you the gift, my son. Take it. Share it with the rest of the world. Heal as many hearts as you can and mend as many minds as you can. Because you shall not count the success of your life by the number of days you have lived, but by the number of hearts you have healed. Go forth. Conquer suffering. Use my words for that. Use the wisdom that I have imparted on all of you for that. This is what the Buddha reminds me every day. But if I had not had an audience, I would not have been able to do any of this. I don't come and speak to chairs and furniture. I come to speak to minds that need mending and hearts that need healing. So give yourselves a good pat on the back for bringing yourselves here over the course of the last year. And I really hope that you have all taken something from these talks, and that it has made, at least begun to make, a change in your life. It has begun to take an impact on your life. And these words are beginning to make an influence on you. In the way you think, in the words that you speak, in the thoughts that you have, in your conduct towards others. No longer do you retaliate, I hope. Whatever comes your way, you only respond with love, kindness and compassion. This is the real pirikara that I want from you. Your robes can't please me. The food offerings, they can't please me. Even if you offered me the whole school, it still won't please me. Because that is not what I'm here for. I'm here to carry the Buddha's message far and wide, so that as many human beings as possible can benefit from his teaching and will consider him their father. So hopefully, over the last few months, I've been able to introduce you the greatest man we've ever known. You might have considered yourselves Buddhists ever since your birth, but perhaps you never stopped to ponder, never stopped to consider what being a Buddhist was all about. You knew you were a man, you knew you were a woman, and you explored every aspect of that, didn't you? This is why as a man, you married a woman. This is why as a woman, you went and married a man. You wanted to explore every aspect of who you were. You educated yourselves and you went on to become teachers, engineers, doctors, professionals. And you explored every aspect of that. You took it to the pinnacle of your career. You went as far as success could take you. And you know what being a doctor is like. You know what being a mother is like. You know what being a father is like. Hopefully, I have been able to give you a glimpse of what being a Buddhist is like. That is all I wanted to give you. And hopefully, these words have been able to have that impact on your lives. I wish you all a very happy new year. And may the new year bring you every success and prosperity and the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem as they guide you on your path to ultimate bliss of Nibbana. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Let's transfer the merits of today's sermon and bring the sermon to a close. First and foremost, and ladies and gentlemen, let us take a moment to remind ourselves how extremely fortunate we are to have been able to listen to the teachings of the Buddha, make offerings to the most, to the virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, acquire merits, and also create this opportunity so that many others such as yourselves could come along and practice the path and work their way towards their salvation. Reminding ourselves that however small or large it might have been, our contributions have helped so many people, so many hearts, so many minds improve themselves and work towards their betterment. Let us transfer all the merits that we have acquired as a result of all that towards all who are deserving of it. So therefore, reminding ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down to generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer these merits to all members of the Mahasangha, present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us also transfer this message to the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Vahanse, who has always been the light of my life and the source of all my inspiration. May he rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to all of the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarika and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha Be that by chance retreating these talks, sharing them out with others or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who, for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide for the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide for the shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers, our employees, and to our teachers, as well as our friends and everyone who's helped us, supported us and assisted us throughout our lives and particularly throughout the past year. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also on this occasion take a moment to pass on the merits that we have all acquired to all the management committee of the school, the staff of the school, as well as everyone, all of the staff of the school who have made this Sundays possible, who have made the sermons possible, who have set up the infrastructure, set up the technology, and including the members of the security team who have always been there outside in the hot sun, looking out for your vehicles, making sure that they were safe, and you and your children were always safe, and did everything in their power to help you and relieve you of the fears and worries so that you could come here and listen to the Dhamma and rejoice in the merits. May they all rejoice in these merits. By the power of these merits, may they also be freed from any physical and mental ailments. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the Devas and Brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the Nimas, gods and deities, who have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha. Let us also transfer these merits to our guardian deities, who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. Let us also, by the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, our ancestors, our forefathers, reminding ourselves that in their sweat, blood and tears, today we are able to enjoy the comforts and the luxuries that have been afforded to us, and we make use of them to help us progress on the path to Nibbana. It is all because of what they have done for us, we are able today to practice the path in bliss and comfort. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer this message to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those men and women who would have lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe. May they all rejoice in this message. Let us also transfer this message to those who've lost their lives in natural disasters and calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, blizzards, storms, fires and pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, friends and acquaintances to us. They will all have gone the extra mile for us on every occasion, being grateful to each and every one of them for everything they've done on our behalf. Let us transfer these merits out of loving kindness and compassion. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, may these merits help them to redeem themselves being born in the blissful plain. May these merits help them to abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I, and everyone who's helped make this program a success, become a rahatan vahanse or an arahat teranin vahanse in this very life itself and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga ginnen midatnva Dvesha ginnen midatnva Moha ginnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayen sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka Siyalu satmayo Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivansata beva Nivansata beva Nivansata beva
Thunruvange suvisi ananta maha guna belen Sīlu loka sīlu sattvayoma Nibbāna parama sukhayen sukhita taravetvā Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.